Cup champions. And no state can match our performance in recent years. Since 2016, our numbers of Mayor's Bread has skyrocketed, unlike the national trend. And this year's Live Full report shows Pennsylvania up over 50%. Why? Our incentives and bonuses are the best in North America. Please visit us at pabread.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Bleeder Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
Sirius XM Sports presents
At the Races with Steve Bick.
Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
Well, there you go. Back from the break, and I don't know if we're going to get Casey having trouble raising Sean, so we might have to wait till tomorrow for Sean. And if I guess the alternate case might be all right. Try, yeah. Well, they can't hurt. Because yeah, we thought we were gonna have Sean yesterday, and then we got Joe, and I, like a dummy, I forgot to text back to Sean and let him know that, you know, we had to push into Wednesday. Yeah, who among us has not done that? Where you, when you go back to text somebody, and sitting in the bubble is a text that you never sent. It's like the worst. It's like the worst feeling. You wince and like, oh, I forgot that was bad. No good. So we'll see if we can't swap out. We can maybe get Tom Law, and actually, I guess I should address this too. While we got about a 10-minute window before Nick Tamaro is going to join us, and I guess I can take the occasion to. To discuss tonight for a second, and yeah, I don't want to give until I have some further details. I don't want to talk much about it, but I'm obviously disappointed that we couldn't be in California for all the coverage this week, and also for tonight's Turf Writers and Broadcasters dinner. And I actually haven't. I've got to put a little something on paper to give to Hammer. Hammer was going to introduce me for this Jim McKay award, and there's a list obviously of thank yous to dole out. I mean, when you get this kind of a career acknowledgement. Obviously, the first person is John Parada, who conceived of putting this show on radio, and had the avenue essentially to with Sirius and with Steve Cohen to mount a horse racing talk show, and John was the conceiver and the financing and really everything that made it possible, and Joe Gracie and Anita St. Clair, Sam and JJ, who were doing a talk show in South Florida and who made this made At the Races conceptually something to that people tuned into, and I was lucky enough to be brought to the show by Gus Alonzo, and Gus, who you've heard for years, whose analysis available at BrizNet. Gus was a member of Derby Trail, and he was doing handicapping on the show with Sam and JJ. And when he had to move to Chicago and leave the show, he recommended me, and it changed my life. So between John Parada, Sam and JJ, and Gus Alonzo, the combination thereof made it possible for me to essentially do something I had dreamed about from early on as a sports fan, and then as a writer for local newspapers, and then as a broadcaster, and as a writer at Colgate on WRCU and in the Colgate Maroon as the sports editor and as the play-by-play man for the hockey team and so forth, and had a talk show concerning sports. And I didn't go into journalism and broadcasting out of college because it was so. And Tom Law is waiting in the wings. He can appreciate this. When I got out of Colgate, I got offers for $8,000 and for $9,500 a year. Those were salaries. $8,200 in Utica or $9,500 in Buffalo. And it was tough to look at your parents in the eye and say, yeah, I'm taking a job for $8,000 doing weekend sports in the 342nd largest market in the country. That didn't go over so good. So so I ended up selling textiles for Cannon Mills. That job only paid $16,000, but at least it was five digits. But this is what I always dreamed of doing, and the fact that I got the opportunity in my 40s to be on radio and these 15 plus years here on Sirius XM is the fulfillment of every dream I ever had as a broadcaster and a journalist, and the fact that he came in horse racing is also particularly noteworthy to me, because the game, which has a reputation of being exclusive, is more inclusive than people really realize. And what makes it inclusive is being dedicated to it and loving it and wanting to see it succeed and thrive, and that's my goal on a daily basis doing this show Monday through Friday. So I thank everybody that tunes in. I thank the contributors, which is virtually every horseman and breeder and industry stakeholder and journalist and writer and you know, all the regulars throughout the years and the advertisers, everybody that makes it possible. It's a privilege for me to bring the game to everybody the way I do daily. So, Tom, and thank you to the turf writers and broadcasters. It's an honor to be in that list of McKay Award winners. And I also want to acknowledge Kenny Rice and Janina Edwards, who you know, were this year's nominees along with me. So thanks so much.
Yeah, it's Steve, we're unfortunate you're not going to be out here. Just got here yesterday myself, but I enjoyed your story about having to look your parents in the eye, and I was thinking, yeah, not going to buy much Schwabbles, only making $9,500 a year. I think my first job, I think I might have made $20. But this is like $94, $95. You know, which I guess is a little better than $9,500, but this was, like I said, it was $94, $95. But I'm still going. But, yeah, it's a little bittersweet, obviously, with you not being out here. I understand your situation. I hope you're doing well. It's good to hear you. I'm glad to get that call this morning at, to come on the air for a little while. Glad to be on the day of your Jim McKay Award presentation out here. We're gonna have the event. We're all ready to roll, and we got some folks lined up to do some nice introductory remarks for you and accept for you. So we're excited.
Well, I'm disappointed Tina was going to come out as well, and you know, hopefully can you know, help it comes off well, and certainly the, you know, the Brigantine overlooking the track, and it should be a lovely evening. And so my send my regrets and appreciation to everybody. Tom, thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. And we've had a little bit of changes throughout the course of the last few weeks regarding people that actually are going to be able to come and not be able to come. We got a good guest list, probably about 125 people scheduled to come, which was good. I think our dinner committee hope to get about 100, so to get 125 was exciting. Not to get too into the details of it all, but unfortunately Lenny Shulman's not going to be able to make it either. Got a note from him this morning saying he's had some health concerns as well, and didn't feel comfortable flying out. So Godspeed, or you know, good wishes to Lenny. Hope he's doing well if he happens to be listening. We're gonna miss him tonight too, unfortunately. And then but we got the Breeders' Cup Writing Awards are gonna be presented tonight, and Dan Smith and John Shear are gonna be honored as well, along with you and Lenny. So it should be a fun time. My first Breeders' Cup here at Del Mar. I've been here before a few times, but never for the Breeders' Cup. So I'm excited, and never been to the Brigantine. And I never did get the story about the Brigantine from that was supposed to be Shug's story.
Save
and
that.
I never saw it. And when you told me to get it, I was like, oh, I gotta find Shug, and I gotta get the story. And I never did. And he's not here. I was like, dang. I'm not going to get it.
No, save that for the next time you see him.
I will, and then I'll relay that next time I'm on. Yeah, maybe hopefully it's not by the time the next time the Breeders' Cup's out here.
Well, it'll be a great evening.
It's good to be here. I'm got out here early, right when the track opened, and it was couldn't have been any more dark than it is.
Yeah.
Than it is in the middle of the night. Now it's kind of lightened up, and the horses are out training, and it's a little chilly. Not for this upstate New Yorker. It's not too bad, but I'm glad I brought my jacket.
Well, <You know? laughs> that was the funny part about me going, Tina and I going out there this summer, because you know, you're essentially promised the you know, idyllic weather, and it was rainy and cold and miserable for like 3 of the 5 days. It was the craziest thing ever. Yeah. But they don't tell you about those. They somehow that escapes the press releases.
Oh yeah, the Chamber of Commerce isn't going to highlight that. I mean, that'd be insane, right? I don't know if you'd never come, but you know, I got out here yesterday and just in time. It was still daylight, and I'm staying right near Torrey Pines, and I'm like, oh, I played a little golf at home in October. I played the other day at McGregor Links with a buddy of mine, and we ended up playing twice. We ended up playing 36 holes. We're like, I think this is going to be the last time we're going to get to play. So then, of course, I'm right near Torrey Pines. I'm like, ooh, maybe I need to go out there and play.
Holy cow.
Actually, I wish I could. I'm a little busy today with the dinner and everything, and then, of course, tomorrow I have the Turf Writers. We have a meeting that we have twice a year. And, you know, I'm actually working, so I'm not here. But yeah, I'm gonna go check out the whole, like, Torrey Pines Preserve and all that. So see,
nice.
Amazing. Jay Hubday was telling me about it. And looking forward to going to do that. Maybe slipping over there for a little while today.
Nice. Well, it looking forward to hearing about tonight, and looking forward, of course, racing gets started today and builds up to Friday and Saturday. Some thoughts, Tom. What are your key storylines? We talked to Joe Clancy yesterday. We got the layout of what thisishorseracing.com is going to offer, including analysis and selections. But give us your top, the keys to making this a successful Cup Friday and Saturday.
Man, it's tough. You know, I was talking about some of the grass races are just like they look near impossible, including the Breeders' Cup Mile, which obviously is a real loaded stack deck. As the Aiden O'Brien horses just go by me, Japan, Mother Earth, and Love, a bunch of good ones zooming past here. But I think usually I like to just, there's a few horses that always end up standing out to me that I like, and I just try to stick with my convictions on them. A horse that I like a little bit, that'll be a price, I think, only because the race was one of the big favorites, is Aloha West. He's a horse I liked him in the sign. I thought he was very impressive at Saratoga. This summer, of course, won 2 races up there, and then ran a real good race in the Phoenix down at Keeneland on opening weekend, which I think might have been the last time you and I were on. I had quite an adventure traveling down to Keeneland that I could tell you a story for another day. Just car troubles and getting a late start. I never got to go to any of the places that you recommended to me, only because the timing didn't really work out. But I loved his race in there, and I like him in here. I mean, I saw he's only 8-1 on the line, so maybe he's maybe a little bit of a wise guy-ish kind of horse. But obviously he's going to have a tall order to go with Jackie's Warrior, who doesn't seem to need to bring his racetrack or anything with him. He runs well no matter where he is, so I know he'll be really tough. He's won, you know, and then I guess, you know, the classic obviously is the marquee race, and, you know, it's good showdown with Brad Cox's horses. I think Medina Spirit, Hot Rod Charlie, you know, talking to somebody this morning, it's a real good classic. I mean, some of the races maybe lost a little bit, you know, Juvenile Filly's only with 6 and Filly and Mare Sprint, they lost a couple horses out of there, so they're down to a 5-horse field in there.
Yeah,
it's a classic, you know, like, who else would you really want? I feel like I've said that to you before on this call, or on your show before. Like, who else would you want? I mean, maybe there's a couple horses here or there that maybe could have filled it out, but it's a nice group in there. Certainly worthy of the name of the Breeders' Cup Classic, kind of the headline event. You know, I like Essential Quality in there. It's just a horse that just gives it to you every time. He runs his race, does just enough to win. You know, his only loss, obviously, was in the Derby when there's a big field and had some trouble. You know, 9-horse field kind of takes care of itself in here. Should be able to get the trip that he wants. And the mile and a quarter, obviously, is certainly no question for him versus maybe his stablemate. Nick's Go, you know, certainly really awesome horse and has had a great campaign this year. And he'll be tough, you know, with that controlling tactical speed. And then Medina Spirit, Hot Rod Charlie, a couple other three-year-olds, you know. It's one of those years where the three-year-olds are really, really good in the Classic. It seems like it happens every 4 or 5 years where the three-year-olds maybe are the standout against the older horses. So should be good. And then I think, you know, I might take a little bit of a stand against Latruska in the Distaff. I like Malafat, so she's not going to be a huge price by any means. But another three-year-old going against older horses. Love the spacing. Spent a little time this morning with Todd, and just watched her train a little while ago. Looks good. I guess she's been doing really well since she's been out here. I haven't seen her in a while since she was at Saratoga. But so you know, taking a stand there. Yeah, take a few stands, I guess. Breeders' Cup weekend. You know, a lot of times, it's better to take a stand. You know, against the heavy favorites. But you know, I think some of the heavy favorites out here this week are very deserving. With the resumes that they have coming in and their credentials, for sure. You know, horse like Life is Good and Echo Zulu, you know, in the juvenile fillies. I think she'll be real tough if she runs back. You know, her races obviously at Saratoga stand out for us. We remember seeing her on opening day, or I think it was opening day when she won. Might have been the second day. And then, of course, the Spinaway. And then ask Steve Asmussen keep his run going. Real could end up being kind of an interesting deal come the end of the year. Who ends up being the trainer of the year? A lot of that might be decided Friday and Saturday for sure.
Well, that's fair, you know, an Asmussen win or two would. I think tilted toward him. There's a case to be made. You know, I was kind of going through things. Chad Brown could end up winning four races over the weekend, very easily, and that might tip the scale. You know, there's also I think there's some important outcomes when it comes to the jocks. And, you know, to me, Joel Rosario going into this weekend has a beat on the jock Eclipse. But, you know, that can easily be swayed as well. A lot of that will come down. Two things, Tom, before we go. I got to get Nick Tamaro in. Beyond the Catalano player, you know, which is a nice, decent enough number, the eight to one. There's got to be a 20-to-1 shot type that you know you're gonna at least do a saver on somewhere in the days.
Well, you mentioned Chad. I don't think he's going to be 20-to-1. What's domestic spending's price? I love him, but he's probably
domestic spending.
European horses take a lot of action in there.
I think with her drawing the 13 Tarnawa, it balances things out a little bit more. I don't think domestic spending goes favored, but yeah, they started out at 9-to-5 for Tarnawa, 4-to-1 for domestic spending. You know what? Actually, it is going to end up closer than you'd expect. So don't be pulling any second choice 4-to-1 Chad Browns on us. If you want a Chad Brown price, how about one of the fillies? And he's got 2 15-to-1 shots in the filly and mare turf.
Yeah, I mean, my sister Nat and
Pocket Square, the 3-year old.
Yeah, I mean, he's the man in those races for sure, and certainly factors. Speaking of him, his former assistant or a woman that worked for him. I wish there were more horses in the juvenile fillies. because I actually think she's a real player in there.
Tarabi.
Yeah.
I mean, missed some time, unfortunately.
Yeah. I mean, ran a huge race in the spinaway. You know, just her second
start.
Yeah,
she did. Yeah.
Ran big in there. Yeah.
Yep.
But again, only six in the race, so not going to get 20-1. You're trying to. There goes Blowout, just went zooming by. Speaking of Chad Brown, there's a potential price.
Well, and also Raging Bull. Raging Bull's 15-1 in the mile.
Yeah, yeah. And like at the end of the day, if you see Raging, all of a sudden you're like, you're looking down the list of the results, and you're like, oh yeah, Raging Bull, Klarovich, Chad Brown won. And then if you see the price, you're going to be like, what? You know, if you were in the time machine maybe a year ago, you'd be like, no way, Raging Bull is paying a price like that. He's a good horse. Chad's right down here, standing down here. He's getting ready to do an interview with somebody. I was almost like, man, I wish I could just hand him the phone, see if he could get us his most logical winner.
Bobby Frankel taught us years ago. Bobby taught him a few things, but Bobby taught us you don't talk to them. You don't talk to them leading up to the weekend. They want to talk after the weekend. So
exactly.
I put away those pre-race interviews a while ago. All you're going to hear is wouldn't trade places with anybody.
That's right. Yeah, everybody's saying, well, coming into the race. Well, yeah, he's way too smart to give it up to me, even though he's known me for a long time and deal with him all the time. He's any of these guys, if you went to Todd or Doug O'Neill or Chad or anybody, they're all going to give you the very similar answers.
Sure. Tom, I appreciate this. And again, thank everybody for me tonight. And I wish I could be there. But this is horseracing.com for all the coverage and for the selections, including Tom and Shapazian going at it again this weekend. And we'll talk next week for some recap.
That's right. I'm hoping to slay the giant, although it doesn't count for nearly as much on the Breeders' Cup weekend as it does at Saratoga. But thanks for having me, Steve, and good luck to everybody this weekend.
Tom Law, folks, Saratoga TL, and this is horseracing.com. We got 20 minutes to spend, and part two of our pace conversation, Nick Tamaro back with us. Nick, good morning.
Morning, Steve. How you doing?
Okay. All right. Nick, let's dive in. We're going to start on we did the dirt yesterday. We'll do the turf today. And we kick it off with what you can only assume is going to be a slick pace in the juvenile turf sprint.
Yeah, certainly seems like one of the safer bets pace-wise of the weekend. Doing a little more work on some of the Europeans, it does feel as if a number of them have a pretty decent amount of positional speed. Twilight Jet, for example, has shown some pretty consistent speed, but obviously the pace in here is coming from the outside. Averly Jane, one-timer, and Run Curtis Run. I've yet to figure out why Run Curtis Run is 20-1 and one-timer is 4-1. I don't think either of them have a particularly big chance, but Run Curtis Run is a significantly likelier winner. So I think this is going to be a supersonic pace. This really feels like a very quick one. Averly Jane only knows one way to go. One-timer only knows one way to go. Same with Run Curtis Run. I'm going to play this race for a collapse, and I think you want the horse with a certain kind of profile, certain kind of rider, and I think you can find one in here.
You don't have to just searching back to Rosario and Derry Nain.
That's where I'm going.
At a nice price.
This race is 3-for-3 in terms of wire-to-wire winners. It has been won in wire-to-wire fashion every year at 5.5 at Churchill in 2018, at 5 at Santa Anita in 2019, and 5.5 at Keeneland in 2020. I'm going to bet that streak ends.
There we go. All right. And we'll jump up to the two routes for the juveniles, and we talked earlier to Kev Humphreys and got some insight to all the imports. And what's interesting about the juvenile fillies turf, you don't necessarily have stretch out types other than Bubble Rock, and it does feel like Bubble Rock ends up being out there winging it. Who's going to go with her?
I think basically the jockeying, funny enough, because it's going to go on here between the horses, mainly in the inside part of the pack, is going to determine how the race unfolds, because Cachet is a horse who has distance limitations, so she's supposed to be a little bit more forwardly placed. Cairo Memories was actually pretty close to a really strong pace last time. I don't think that Ken is going to want to go. I think he'll want to sit, and he'll probably be a couple lengths off of it. Turner Loose is going to the lead. Bubble Rock is supposed to go to the lead. Doesn't exactly have the most aggressive rider on board, but you know, speed and pace figure-wise, she's supposed to be very much in the mix. And then the variable you have is Koala Princess, who was a wire-to-wire winner in a turf sprint on debut and then came from well off of it while enjoying a run-through on the inside on a you know, the much better part of the turf course at Kentucky Downs. So Sail By also was in relatively close attendance to the pace last time out that really wasn't that slow either. So it's one of those funny, like, there are a number of horses that can show speed, but I don't exactly know who is. And I think rider intent may play a pretty big role in this particular race. So I think you can pretty much count on Turner Loose and Bubble Rock being forward. I would imagine that Cairo Memories won't be too far off of it. I would say that, you know, if we were going to grade what type of pace this looks like, it feels as if it'll be a contested pace. I don't expect it to get particularly strong, but I don't think it's a situation where, you know, if you like California Angel and you know she's going to be coming from deep in the pack, then I don't think you should be dissuaded by the fact that it looks like the pace might not completely boil over. I think it's going to be solid enough to help anybody.
There's a host of mid-pack stock and go types, and in fact, Chad might be beautifully positioned with his two, Consumer Spending and Hottie.
I totally agree, and you know, look, Hottie is a horse who's a lot better, I think, than people are probably going to give her credit for. She absolutely demolished that field in the maiden race on debut, and it's worth noting that Gallina Rush, who finished second to her that day and got elevated via one of the more ridiculous disqualifications in racing, ended up coming back and finishing a very good second in the Matron behind Bubble Rock. So that was a race that I think probably had a little bit more quality than we necessarily realized at the time. So yeah, Hottie is very, very nice. And Consumer Spending is probably better than, you know, I think what everybody's holding against Consumer Spending is they're questioning the competition she beat at Laurel, and they're saying she got a slow fig. So that's the kind of horse that can take a big step forward in a short period of time for Chad. I'm not going to be surprised if she does exactly that.
Looking at the boys' race, and you've got got an interesting group here, and it's funny, Kev and I, without having discussed things, sort of landed on the same import, and you know, for those that wonder about these two races, the filly turf, the juvenile filly turf, has been much more dominated by domestic horses, and specifically by Chad, but also Brad Cox and Mark Cassie have thrown in. The boys' race has been much more the arena for the imports, and when it comes to the pace in here, it's kind of a similar story. There's a couple of stretch outs, including Slipstream, who I absolutely loved going into the Futurity and who was absolutely terrific. And Christophe Clement continues to look for his first win in this event, as does Kenny McPeak. McPeak has got Tiz the Bomb, who is at least tactical. Dakota Gold for Danny Gargan, I think, has got some foot. What do we see pace-wise in here?
Did you hear that Tiz the Bomb broke through the starting gate before his last start? I mean, I'm saying that in jest. I feel like I have heard a thousand times that Tiz the Bomb broke through the starting gate before his last race and still ended up winning. Guess what? He still got back in the gate with the same group of bad horses and ended up running them all down. So just letting everybody know. You know, I think the main difference to me between this race and the Juvenile Fillies turf is that the Europeans in here actually have, I think they're actually very good, and they have some speed. And mainly, I mean Modern Games. I mean, Modern Games comes in off a wire-to-wire win overseas at Newmarket, and in the race before that, he was very much forwardly placed. So he is a horse who's not going to let them get too far away. I think he is an absolute cinch in this race. I think he will. Yeah, this is one of my more certain opinions of the weekend. I think he's just going to be way too good. This feels like I think Charlie Appleby is so terrific. But anyway, this conversation is about pace. I think Dakota Gold will be forward. You know, you figure guys like Gargan and Saez, they want to take advantage of a horse's tactical speed, and you know, you sort of be wasting Dakota Gold's good inside post by not using it. Dubawi Legend, for that matter, in his last start, second behind the Appleby Train Native Trail, was forwardly placed as well. So I think you'll see him certainly used out of the gate by James Doyle to get a forward position. You know, Coinage did wire the with anticipation. You can't imagine him letting them get too far away. Grafton Street came out of his runner-up finish behind Albar with a basically wire-to-wire win on the synthetic at Woodbine. So, you know, it's not a, if you're a Timeform US user, this is not coded red, mainly because there's like four horses in the race who they don't have pace data on, but I think this is going to be a strong pace, and I think it'll help the horses that want to come from mid-pack or back there, and I think Modern Games really figures to get a good trip from the inside rating and saving ground, so this is a fun race. I think it's a really good edition of it, and I kind of scoffed when I saw that it was the nightcap on Friday, figuring, you know, the juvenile's more of a marquee race, but this race is a lot of fun. I'm really looking forward to it.
That's the Friday action. We're going over the turf paces. If you missed yesterday, Nick walked through the dirt race paces, and you can catch that at the pod or the archive. Let's get into Saturday, the turf sprint, and here's another, you know, a race that on paper or at least on theory is supposed to have pace, and there's, you know, front end parties involved, but I wouldn't characterize this as a red hot pace.
No, not at all. And I think for the type of race, it's actually going to be surprisingly dull. You know, Golden Pal is like one of the easiest horses of the weekend to bet against based on the fact that his reputation far exceeds his performances. But he has a massive pace advantage in this field. And I know that Lieutenant Dan is one spot to his outside and is likely to be forward as well. But Golden Pal's got a little bit quicker first step, and he's probably going to be able to put a length on Lieutenant Dan if his past efforts are give any indication. And there's nobody else in here who can keep up. So that's the big worry for me. I don't think Charmaine's Meal will be ridden aggressively enough to really confront those two early. Kamari is off the layoff with Rosario. You really can't imagine she's going to be that forward. Gear Jockey is not slow, but he's not nearly fast enough to go toe-to-toe with Golden Pal. So I'm very concerned that Golden Pal is going to have a pretty clear edge pace-wise. If there's a defection between now and race day and Bombard gets in, it could be a slightly different-looking race. Which I think I would certainly welcome, because I'd like for it to be a little bit more of a contested pace. But at this point, it does look like Golden Pal's really in the driver's seat. I wouldn't necessarily be too concerned if you like some of the European imports, mainly a case of you, who's not really that slow. So I think he can get himself into a decent position, and he's obviously coming in just really, really good form at the moment. So interesting race, but again, unfortunately, it does seem as if there's a little bit of a shortage of speed relative to what you'd expect in this kind of race.
Well, if you're looking for a shortage of speed, look no further than an hour later in the Filly and Mare Turf, because going to Vegas is going to the front, is going to take some catching, and may forget to stop. I know that it's implausible, but there is nothing that I can see that is going to, you know, contest her, at least for the first, what, the 7/8?
Yeah, and remember also, I mean, she's under the hands of a very, very skilled front-end rider. Umberto Rispoli is excellent. I guess the biggest worry is that she was going a mile and a quarter last time. She set a pretty slow pace, and she was still sort of all out to get the job done. So you wonder if there might be some distance limitations with her as well. But, you know, that said, I think you've got to take her very, very seriously in here. And, you know, my opinion is that the American contingent in this race is very average. So I with all due respect to Warlike Goddess, who has won, you know, four races in a row, those are bad races. Those are not races anywhere near this caliber. And beating Great Island and My Sister Nat in the Flower Bowl is great, but that's not a proper setup for what she's going to meet here. I mean, look at the horses Love has been running against. All right, look at the trip that Akinella had last time out. You know, the problem, of course, pace wise, because this conversation is about pace, is that none of these Europeans really want to be forward. So it's a race where going to Vegas with that inside post and a relatively short run to the first turn, I think you're going to see you're going to see her get to the front. You're going to see her try and establish position and take him as far as she can. Adaria was not really ever that far off the pace. Last year, going a mile and 3/16, I think you could see her being a little bit forward, too, from the 12. I imagine William Buick's going to have to use her a little bit out of the gate. Love's Only You is actually not unlikely to be in a decent position early as well. She has shown some tactical speed in the past, including in the Shima Classic in Dubai. Of course, that race, that was a very strong effort on her part, and it was at a mile and a half. So, I mean, maybe there was a little bit more interest in having her forward. But, yeah, I mean, if the conversation focuses on pace, going to Vegas does look very interesting from that perspective. It's just going to be the $64,000 question is she good enough?
We got about 3 minutes, Nick, to do the mile and the turf paces. And the mile, there are horses that have been known to go to the front. Certainly Smooth Like Straight and Blowout are the two candidates. Then it becomes a question of who is going to, gain position as much as anything else.
Yeah, that's going to be the interesting thing. So is Rispoli going to be allowed to get it and sort of establish it with Smooth Like Straight, or is he going to let Blowout go and then try and set up outside? If that happens, I become a little worried about Blowout wiring this field. I think there's a dearth of early speed beyond those two. And, the pit time from Pace Projector, the next horse that it has in line after those two is Raging Bull, because Raging Bull's been in a number of fast-paced races. But, I mean, he's obviously a horse who's going to come from way out the back. So I think if you like Blowout or Smooth Like Straight, you have to feel good about the way this race shapes up on paper. And Smooth Like Straight, even though the pace wasn't that strong in the City of Hope Mile last time, did get hooked by a big long shot on the backstretch. So I think he deserves pretty serious consideration as a pace threat. And then since we're running low on time, the turf looks like it's going to have a real pace. Acclimate and Tribuvon sort of only have one way to go, and I think they're both going to hook up early. If there's somehow a couple of scratches and Channelmaker gets into this field, I mean, this thing could get really, really fast, and that would certainly help pretty much everyone, because the balance of the field wants to come from some distance out of it. But if you like Tarnawa, if you like Tiona, if you like Domestic Spending, if you like Gufo, Yibir, all those horses figure to get a very, very solid setup with the presence of those two pace types who are both likely to show speed and are unlikely to hold it for more than about 10 furlongs.
Perfect. There it is. The turf races Friday and Saturday, and the pace concepts. And I just realized, looking at the turf, that somehow I'm missing a couple of pages of the PPs. What the hell's going on here? I've only got one
all
through
62
six.
62 of them on my DRF formulator printout are and accounted for on my setup.
Well, Nick, outstanding. I appreciate it. When we get together tomorrow, we'll go and we'll attack the Friday card, and then we'll close everything out on Friday with the Saturday card.
Sounds like a plan, my friend.
The one and only Nick Tamaro, NTAM 1215, and with Nick and I wrapping up our analysis in written form for the AmWager Form to Win at the Races Breeders' Cup Betting Companion, which should be done late this afternoon, and I'll send out the missive on the Twitter and on Facebook, etc. Nick Tamaro, everybody, and Tom Law, and Kev Humphreys, the long shot lad. He'll be back tomorrow as well. Sid Fernando, Sirewatch Pedigree Focus, brought to you by Hill and Dale. And Dick Powell, that got us started with some of his international insights. We've also got to get, of course, to Nick Luck. We've got the DRF guys to go through. That'll include Jay Pridman tomorrow. Jay with a Thursday visit. So there it is. Replay tomorrow, 6 to 9 here on Sirius XM. Archive and pod in a little bit when Case gets a chance to load things up. And back for the Thursday get-together, 9 o'clock tomorrow. Thanks again to everybody for all the kind words and that contributed to making me eligible to be recognized this evening. You're the most important part about the races. Talk to you tomorrow. Thanks, everybody.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Here in and Pennsylvania, we're proud of our breeding program, the best in North America. But we're also proud to be leaders in this industry. The PA Horse Breeders Association is funding cutting-edge research at Penn Vet to detect gene doping in thoroughbreds. And we endorsed the SAFE Act to help protect the most vulnerable horses. Plus, we're pleased to support the aftercare programs set up by our horsemen's groups. Just a few of the reasons why you should join us in Pennsylvania, the premier place to breed and race.